topic is Crossing the Great Divide, what baby boomers and the church have to say to each other. And my name is Steve Hitchcock, and I'm here for these 2 weeks to talk about the areas of ministry in everyday life, to see where the treasure that's in earthen vessels, where the earth really is, and how that treasure relates to that. I earn my living by working for a fundraising firm that works with nonprofit organizations. Another part of my life, however, is as a volunteer to help with an organization called New Models for Ministry. And many of you have been here before, so you know the routine, although I forgot to bring this pin I want to keep, but let me pass it around anyway in great trust. If you'd like a copy of the newsletter, please take it. If you'd like to continue getting it, please write your name and address, and I'll see that you get it without obligation. I'm happy to talk about ministry in everyday life, particularly in with regard to the theme, and particularly at Holden. I think there, as I've been thinking about it in the time I'm here, those of us who are here at Holden have two ministries. We do have a ministry to those who are in the world, to those with whom we work, those with whom we live, those in our communities, those with whom we teach, to lift up the treasure that we have experienced here and throughout our lives and to share that with them. That's one function of a ministry that all of us have as God's people. But I think folks who have been to Holden also have a ministry to the church, to call the church out of its captivity, to call the church to be the new Israel, to be in exile in the world, to serve the world and not just serve itself. And I think that the whole issue of baby boomers, as you may have noticed, I thought of the catchy little thing of when worlds collide. They are colliding worlds, and I think it's a chance for both the boomers and the church to hear good news. What I'd like to do is divide this into two chunks, to take about 20 minutes and talk with you about who boomers are and what your experience is, either as being a parent of a boomer or relative to a boomer, or probably it looks about half of us in this room are baby boomers. And we can talk about what that experience is for us. What does it mean to be a baby boomer? Then I'd like to take 20 minutes put out what I think are the ways in which boomers and the church can talk with each other. And I'll need your help. I have two teenagers, and where I work, I never get to finish a sentence, much less a thought, so you'll need to give me some encouragement. I'm not used to speaking 20 minutes at a clip, but I'll try. And then we'll have a few minutes that be for supper just to talk with each other about whether what I've said is helpful or not. Okay, well, who are baby boomers? What does it take to be a baby boomer? Anyone, what constitutes a baby boomer?
Late 40s.
Late 40s.
Born in the late
40s. Post-World War II. 1946 is the start of the baby boom. When did it end?
62.
64, pretty close. The peak was in 1957. 4.3 million babies born that year. In this period from 1946 to 1964, 17 million more babies were born than should have been born. Now, what do I mean by should? If one had taken American history and just extrapolated it out, the birth rate should have had 17 less million babies than it did. So the baby boom is like a python that swallowed a bear. And we have been going through the python throughout of all our life, a big lump or hump in the python, if you will. So how many of us are there? How many baby boomers are there? Yes?
47.
No?
Or
There were 4.3 million born in 1 year.
Oh, no.
The total number is 78 million. It used to be 76 million, but the number of baby boomers is actually increasing. How can that be happening?
Immigration.
Immigration, yes. It's one of the curious things that this big lump of in the Python, in a sense, is attracting other baby boomers into the United States. And so the number has grown just since the 1960s by another 2 million baby boomers. So there's 78 million of us. What's the population in the United States? 240. So we're just about a third of the population. Is that right? Is my math correct? And there are 91 million families, and most boomers are in families, so we're a disproportionate share also of American families. Well, talk to me, how are boomers different from their parents and the rest of the population? It's not just the size, that's one thing, but what else?
I've never lived in that area, they know what Juan is.
Okay. Okay. All right. Most of our needs have been met. What else about us?
I think we were raised in a period of time that had reflected the most prosperity.
Okay, prosperity. It's the greatest period of prosperity in the United States. Yes, please.
The media and corporations, business, everybody seems to cater to us.
Okay. We've been catered to. Yes, there were, yes, courted. Yep. Used to be hula hoops, and now it's Club Med. I mean, it's just as we get older, the products change, but we're still put off. Yes.
Most are high school educated, at least.
At least. Highly educated. 54% of all college degrees are held by baby boomers. The baby boomer is 500% more likely to have a college degree than his or her parents. So we're much more highly educated. Yes, Luke.
We were born after Donald miscarriage.
Okay, good. The mushroom cloud has overhung everything we've done. Yes.
I don't know what the statistic is, but there must be a financial component to this.
Yes. Yes, our earning power is anywhere from, as we talked about yesterday, probably ad nauseum, somewhere between 15 and 26% lower than our parents. We earn less money.
You'd expect it to be higher, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Highly educated.
Why is that?
Inflation.
Inflation? What else?
Competition.
Competition.
We've got 78 million people.
Right. Plus, our parents are so healthy that they're still holding the jobs. So that there's a, you know, the thing is stuck, if you will.
Technological boom.
Technological, yes.
First TV generation.
TVs? Yes.
Kind of like the global village.
Global village, yes. The amount of travel, the amount of people who have been to Europe, Asia, in the baby boom generation is incredible.
Mobility?
Mobility, yes. We don't live where our parents used to live. How many of you live in the same town that your parents live in? Okay. Anything else about us? We eat out twice a week. Why do we eat out twice a week? What's the other fact? Right. 70% of boomer women work outside the home. And it's just over 50% for the general population. So we are different. There was something else.
Oh, we were saying still not for profit.
Still not for profit, right. How gainfully we didn't say, did we?
I'm just guessing that the last Sunday we were at church.
Okay.
Our church, we consider ourselves from the Midwest church.
You cannot be from the Midwest. So out in the West, my
doesn't matter.
Is unchurched.
That's what I'm yeah, saying. Less our less
unchurched, I guess we should say. Interestingly enough, in most, there have been several surveys, 3 out of 4 baby boomers say that religion is a very important part of their life. But in general, they are less attached to the institutional church.
What percentage go to church?
I could tell you that. This is fascinating, and those, especially of us, this book is in the bookstore. And you will enjoy reading it. It's a very easy read. It is very fascinating. It's a good book. And I'll look that statistic up afterwards. What else about baby boomers?
Fewer children.
Average family size is now 3.
Start later.
Yes.
Okay.
And I want to, yes, please.
These people are starting to sound to me like yuppies. What's the difference just simply when they were born and how many of them there are?
Yes. Yuppies are the people that are making more money or they're not having children at all, and therefore they figure that yuppies make up only about 3% of the baby boom generation. Most baby boomers are earning between $20,000 and $25,000 a year, and if you don't have children, that's pretty hard to be a yuppie on that.
Yeah. Thanks.
But it is a very small percentage, really.
Steve, you said how many children is the average? How many children in the average family?
Just one.
One child.
Well, I should say the average family size is 3. There's 2 factors that contribute to that. Single parents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But 1 out of 4 baby boomer families has only one child, or I should say 1 out of 4 baby boomer women will only give birth to one child. Okay. Half are or will be divorced. Unless things change dramatically. Currently, at least half are, slightly over half.
What about blended families then?
Right.
Is that a large?
Yeah, because most are married, which means that people are marrying. The majority of baby boomers will marry twice because the majority will divorce. What else?
Daycare.
If 70% of the women are working outside the home, someone is taking
care of the
house. Right. There's another thing that's related that's fascinating to me that not only are there single parents because of divorce, but there are single parents by choice. Of the out of wedlock births, to use an old-fashioned phrase, 65% of those are to women who are 20 years of age or older. The popular mythology is that all the out of wedlock children are being born to poor teenagers. That's clearly not the case. Even more startling is that these are out of wedlock births. 29% of them are to women 25 years of age and older. And for women 30 and older, the figure is 11% of the out of wedlock births. So for whatever reason, many women are choosing to have children without marriage. Again, because at least 20% of boomer women will never marry.
Another thing I would add to that would be the birth control.
Okay. So there's lots of choice about family, about marriage, and about reproduction that our parents didn't have.
The number of women involved in church, like pastors,
uh-huh.
is a phenomenon. Never was before, as far
okay.
as maybe in the beginning of the church, but at this time.
Women professionals. It's estimated by the end of the century that half of all executives will be women, which is only fair since they're half of the population. But that is a dramatic change. What does this mean, that 20% of them marry, divorce, single parents, three? There are a lot of boomers who are going to be single and are single. Anything else?
What percentage of us are going to be
on? Right. It was fascinating because they talk about the number of people who are actually in nursing homes now, and it's only about 3%. Let me see if I could just find that one real quickly. On average, we're only sick 3 days a week. Isn't that nice to hear? I mean, 3 days a year. Excuse me. Okay. Sorry. Yes. Sorry. Isn't this one-fifth of employees of Travelers Corporation older than 30 years of age are caring for an elderly relative at home? That's just amazing. Nursing homes. Less than 2% of people aged 65 to 74 are in nursing homes. Among people aged 75 to 84, only 7% are in institutions, but 22% of people aged 85 and older are in nursing homes. Still a minority, but a sizable one. An estimated 6.6 million Americans aged 65 and older will need long-term care today. So the percentages are actually quite low. And it is interesting to me that our stereotypes of older people immediately put them in nursing homes when only a very small percentage of them are.
That will change when those 78 million of us are 70 years old and we may only have one child to take care of.
Or no children. Right.
Or no children to take care of parents.
Right.
Singles and
right. One of the themes in this book written by a young woman is that children are that wise boomers have children as the best insurance against old age, because if the traveler's thing is true, which I think it is, that one-fifth of an average group of mature adults is also caring for elderly parents, when there are fewer of us around to care for us, fewer children around, we'll be in trouble. The statistics are pretty amazing because it's not only that there are fewer, but we're going to live longer. It had never sunk in before. In 1900, the median age was 36 years. In 1980, the median age is 72, exactly double. Yes.
It's getting better all the time.
Yeah. The other theme in this book is that we grew up in the sort of live and let die, live for today, seize the day, carpe diem, if you will. But this book says, gosh, guess what? Most of you are going to live to be an old person. You're not going to get Social Security, or what you get from Social Security will be minuscule. What's the fairy tale about the wise person who saves for the... Yes. Anything else about us? that just from your experience as a baby boomer, what else describes us? Again, it's a very small percentage, and usually for a short period of time. Most cohabitation lasts about a year and a half. For a variety of reasons, you either split up or get married. But, yes?
There's phenomena. The parents of baby boomers are the sandwich generation. And okay. Baby boomers have, grandma is with the parent, they're taking, their parents are taking care of their grandparents. And there's sort of a loss of, responsibility, because we're healthy, we can take care of grandma.
Right. Yes, you're doubly caught. Sometimes you're taking care
of the grandchildren and grandma,
and sometimes you're even taking care of the boomers who are reacting to some divorce, or they've lost their job or whatever, and you're caring. So what you're really saying is, for the first time, probably in human history, certainly in American history, there are four generations that are active. The true extended family, if you will. Four generations, think of it. It's pretty amazing. Anything else about us? We read lots of books. The number of books read per year is going up every year. It's now 21% of the American population is now reading at least one book a year. That may not sound too exciting to you, but in 1955, it was only 14%. Americans are now buying 8 books a year, which they hardly, the numbers started at 3 or 4. There may have been some other factors. A third of all baby boomers go to at least one play a year. We are pretend to be educated and literate. Yes. Yes. Over half of us don't like our bodies anymore because we're not fit enough or we're not thin enough or whatever. So we do have that preoccupation with fitness. But we are much more fit than our parents. The difference between cardiovascular, Libby may know this better than I do, that the percentages of cardiovascular disease are declining.
It also seems that we're a group that takes on causes. There have been a lot of issues that have come up over, say, the last 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
It has been this group of people who have been in the forefront yelling and screaming about them, which is different than our parents or prior, who maybe allowed someone else to take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the government taking care of it anymore. It's the grassroots people. It seems to fall in this category.
Certainly the minority of leadership. The statistics are really the opposite, though. Most of us are not voting. Our parents are voting.
I was thinking of causes.
Right. Yes, but we don't translate that cause to political action, which is a strange phenomenon, if you will. Although baby boomers were very critical in the election of Ronald Reagan, because baby boomers are economically conservative and politically conservative and socially liberal. And so Reagan's economic agenda was implemented, but his social agenda was never implemented, and is unlikely to be.
And the majority don't vote?
Yes, the majority of baby boomers don't vote. But they were a critical factor in putting Reagan over the top, and those baby boomers who did vote, the majority voted for, the overwhelming majority voted for Ronald Reagan. The most liberal group is always people who are 55 years and older, because they don't have anything to protect anymore, and they're just hellraisers. Most of the causes I work with, that most of the clients are people who are opposed to U.S. intervention in Central America, people who are in supporting disarmament organizations, and Democratic candidates. Most of that money comes from people who are 65 years of age and older. It's blown me away to see how the donors to these organizations are older adults. They have the, oh, they certainly they have the money, but they're all, but they're also politically liberal for a variety of reasons. Some rooted in working class ethnic communities, as well as most donors to nonprofit causes are highly educated. They're less charitable, although they do give money away. There's a demographic reason for that, which is, which we'll talk about at length on Saturday, about why people give money. But the primary reason is that most boomers do not perceive that they have discretionary income. Charitable contributions in the United States are given out of discretionary income. Discretionary income is a psychological phenomenon, not a economic phenomenon. And now it does have some correlation. Most of us, at least if you were statistically listening to the statistics, don't have money to give away. In fact, we are chronically in debt. We spend more than we make.
Is that another characteristic?
Yes. In debt, which is, and the other thing is that they don't save. Right, and partly because they're squeezed. Yes, please.
How much has that got to do with the lifestyle as opposed to their parents? An affluent lifestyle, which because they were catered to, et cetera, they have grown used to, so they're not ready to tighten the belt, so to speak.
But unfortunately, in life, it's never just one thing. It's A, they don't have them. They literally have less money than their parents had when they were that age. Although anecdotally it may not seem that way to you, but that's the reality is they don't have as much money. And secondly, they have to pay more, significantly more for housing. And thirdly, they do have, we do have, you know, all our needs have always been met, and when you wanted a candy bar, you went down to the store and you got a candy bar. So it's all of those things acting together.
The question is our lifestyle better than our parents? What's the, is it?
I don't know. It's a good question. I hadn't thought about that in that context. Is our lifestyle better?
Yeah.
We've got more stuff. We don't have any savings. Our vacations have shortened. Most boomers take weekend vacations, and the disappearance of the week-long vacation. Or 2 week long vacation.
You're having to have both people work, you know, yeah. That's your lifestyle.
Right. We've maintained the standard of living only by having both people work.
And it becomes more stress.
Right.
Which
may have led to the increase in
divorce. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Those of you who are on the other side, do your children or your nieces and nephews have a better standard of living than you had? Definitely.
I don't think so. I don't either. They're so short of time.
Okay. There's no time.
Short of time.
That's all about.
Yeah.
It's
not one problem. Lifestyle, you might have to define that.
Okay.
Yeah, we have two cars, or how many cars do we have? Probably more than two.
Right.
And we have, well, do we, a lot of us wouldn't have a home.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to our parents.
Right.
Very few of our parents didn't have a home.
Right.
We may not own a BMW, we may be renting condos.
Yeah. You know, and on the other hand, you know, my parents didn't have cafe latte, and they didn't have repertory theaters. I mean, the things that are important to me. I mean, it's a mixed bag. I mean, yes.
I see my children having a real tough time when death, severe illness, those resources that uh-huh. my parents had, that I had, you know, unchurched, you know, doing it my way, off by themselves, not, you know, when something happens, they don't have somebody there to say, well, they'll work this out together. And so I see that they have more things.
Right.
They have deficits that rubber meets the road. They
right. I think that's true, and that's one of what I want to talk about more. That what resources we don't have, and what resources we're looking to you to help us acquire. Yes,
please. It's sort of a paradox. Our daughter and husband have $100,000 equity in their home at age 33,
right.
Something we never had. But their housing payments with an ARM loan are such that they may have to move.
Right.
And rent, maybe.
Whatever it is, let me just turn this on its head. It was a historical accident. There were 17 million extra births. And one way to think about it is that we're unique. Really what happened is our parents are unique.
When I see my children, they chose that style. I have one that chose to be granola.
Uh-huh.
And you have another one that chose professional.
Right.
And another one that chose to have no children. They all chose that. And
but you may not have, but statistically, your generation chose to marry early. Our parents, by and large, were teenage mothers. In fact, baby boomers are really the result of mothers. Our mothers married as teenagers, which has not been the case in United States history. In most of U.S. history, women married in their mid to late 20s. Many of them stayed single. Almost all of our mothers married, which has never been the case again in U.S. history. All of our mothers stayed home so that we could have the luxury of choosing to be a granola or choosing that. We had the security of a mother staying home, again, which is historically not the case in the United States. Whether it's on the farm or in a cottage industry, mothers were part of the economic unit. They did not stay home with their children. So in a sense, it's a unique part of American history, and boomers are the result of it.
So part of what you're saying is that our generation views as the quote American dream was really an aberration.
Yes, clearly. Why could mothers stay home?
She's been pulling me all these
years. Yes. Yeah, clearly it was an aberration. Clearly an aberration that women married younger. The statistics that were gathered on unwanted pregnancies during that period of time are alarming. Not alarming, they're startling. It's almost equal to the number of extra births. 16 million unwanted pregnancies during the baby boom era. How many extra children were there? 17 million. But for some reason, it was okay to have those children. You know, it's no secret that abortion is a recent phenomenon. There were lots of abortions before that period of time. People were very sloppy with contraception during the baby boom era because their husbands were making a lot of money, and what's one more? We can afford it. We could buy suburban houses because the government was going to support it, so we could have houses big enough. So that became truly an aberration.
This also flies in the face of the conservative, the far right, which is calling for a return to the good old days where mom was staying home.
Right.
Only thinking back to one generation as opposed
yes.
to
the right. Well, I think it's a treasure that we've been given. This baby boomer, we're not going to go away. What are the words? Let me try to say some things quickly so that we have some time to talk. To get back to your very intriguing point, we need, I think as baby boomers, we need to hear some good news from the church. I think the church has an opportunity to witness to the treasure that is in the earthen vessels. Namely, the church has to offer us is an understanding of identity, what it is to have self-worth, what it is to be a valuable person, to offer us an identity that transcends, that is more conditional, that is unconditional, because look it's not going to be money, it's not going to be looks, It's not going to be life forever. All of those things are crumbling. Most of us, I mean, case in point, where I work. At age 39, I became executive vice president of a corporation. And I have colleagues, two of my vice presidents, one is 35, the other is 36. What does that say to all the other 20-year-olds, the 25-year-olds, and the 26-year-olds? They lose. They're losers. I'm only 39, now I'm 40 today. Unless I screw it up or unless something fatal happens to me, I'm going to be around for a long time. So for the rest of them, their careers have plateaued. So what the church has to offer, I think, is to say, hey, that isn't who defines who you are anyway. The God who calls us and loves us gives us an identity that is much more valuable than any of that. The second thing that I think that the church has to offer is a model and an inspiration and a calling to service. I have a brother who's on the tail end of the baby boom era who is very unhappy. He just has not found happiness yet. He makes more money than I do. He has a garage full of toys. But he is just not very happy. And I think the message the church has for my brother and for other baby boomers is, guess what? Self-fulfillment is not the road to happiness. The road to self-fulfillment is, paradoxically, to serve others. That you gain your life by losing it. You receive great treasure only when you give it away. And the church, as we talked about earlier, is the service institution in our society. They have been on the front line of the soup kitchens and the clothes closets. You have, in the church, an opportunity for service. Finally, I think the church has a chance to offer us an intellectually substantive faith. One of the things that we noted about baby boomers is that they are incredibly well-educated. The number of doctorates, the number of advanced degrees is actually phenomenal. The reading that we alluded to, and I think that that's part of what's attractive about Holden, is it says, yes, this is a faith, but it's a faith that's rooted in reason, it's faith that's rooted in scriptures, those are words. It takes the mind. This is a chance for all of us to keep learning. I think that that's a challenge to the church to develop educational programs, to develop a worship life that can answer that hunger for substantive faith. Well, I think conversely, the boomers have some things to say to the church. The first is around time. Boomers are saying to the church, don't waste my time. Both of us work. Both of us have to work long hours in order to afford that $100,000 equity in that $300,000 house. Whether that's morally right or wrong is another question. But whatever that is, boomers are working more. They're both trying to care for families. We don't have a lot of extra time to sit through meetings that discuss whether or not to have locks on the cabinets in the kitchen. Don't fritter our time. Secondly, I think the issue of time means that we don't have time to listen to ineffective communication. The challenge to the church is to learn, as Walt Wangren would say, to speak in our language, to learn to communicate effectively and quickly so that we can understand what you're saying. Thirdly, I think it means that the issue of time means that the church, the institutional church, is going to have to learn how to get its act together to maintain itself. Don't look to us to help you keep either your physical plant going or your bureaucracy. We don't have time to volunteer as our parents used to. I mean, I would go with my father almost every weekend to fix the stairs in the parish hall
or to go and do some gardening, or he would spend hours in meetings over finance. The institutional church is going to have to either train itself, develop the electronic equipment, and the technology is all there, or hire the professional staff to do that kind of maintenance for itself. And we will expect that to be done. Baby boomers and yuppies are pretty demanding. They don't want to go and participate in run-down buildings. The rest of society certainly isn't. So I think that that's the message about time that baby boomers are saying. The other word from baby boomers to the church is that you desperately need to redefine what is family. The traditional family is gone. The percentage of always married and boy, girl, you know, the perfect model family is so infinitesimal any longer. We have to have a new definition of family that includes singles, that includes blended families, that includes single parents, that includes women and men who choose not to get married, who choose not to have children. What is that definition of family? I don't know, but that's the challenge to the church. That definition, by the way, I think will have to take very seriously the equality of men and women. No matter what your theological view about that issue is, or political view, the reality is, in boomer families, women and men are becoming more equal. There's lots of complaining and there's lots of moaning and groaning, but men are doing gradually, probably grudgingly, more of the housework, and women are earning more and more of the money. The inequity is gradually disappearing. So at some point, women and men become unequal. The church's traditional definition of family has been always that the man is the head of the family. So the new definition of family is going to have to take that into account. Finally, the word to the church from baby boomers is, give us a faith that is experience-based. We grew up at a time in which life was experience. Seize the day. I don't know how many of you have seen the movie about sucking the marrow out of life. Again, whether that's morally right or wrong, our experience has been that experience is reality. I think that that's a tremendous challenge to the church to demonstrate to us what is the pragmatic value of the faith that we hold. Is it just some abstract, old-fashioned idea? Or is it something that really matters in the day-to-day hurly-burly of life? Well, those two words, one from boomers and one from the church, there is an area that overlaps, to use my this is the part that I think is fun. My chocolate cake will come back here, the all-purpose illustration. What's the frosting in the middle, the frosting that stays moist, the chance for boomers in the church to work together to make this world a better place, to participate in God's coming kingdom? There are three things that I think that the boomers in the church have in common, issues that we can explore and celebrate. One of them is stewardship. And that's both stewardship of money and stewardship of creation. Our environment is in a disastrous shape. I just read, does anyone know the number of toxic sites in the United States? The number is absolutely incredible. I wish I knew it. Pardon? No, it's in the thousands. I mean, yeah. One out of four Americans lives within 50 miles of a toxic dump.
Or several.
Or several, right.
There's at least three within.
Right. Our environment's in terrible shape. Our economy's in terrible shape. I think both the church and the boomers have a stake at solving that issue.
to realize that the earth is the Lord's, that all of this stuff is a gift, and we are stewards of it. We are here to manage it. We don't own it. It's ours to use. The second area is the issue of sanctification. And again, that relates back to you. Both the folks, both our parents and us, and those in the church are dealing with the fact that we're all dying. We've tried to avoid that fact, but lo and behold, we do turn 40 and our knees get sore. We see our parents who die, and often we care for them as they die. We see our grandparents and so on. What does it mean to be sanctified? What does it mean if we really believe what Luther says, that each day we die, or St. Paul says that we carry death in our body? How is it possible to be dying physically and at the same time being reborn to new life? Now that may sound like a very highfalutin issue. It's an issue that I think has currency on the street, if you will. Our society desperately needs renewal. Remember, we said that boomers are plateauing. Institution after institution in society is in the process of getting old in the bones, of getting arthritis. You're clogged with people who are in their 30s and 40s, who are at the same job, have no prospects for the future. We have people who are retired earlier than they want to retire. What is it that's going to renew all of us, to keep us young, if you will, in spirit, to keep people who are working in jobs that seem dead-end caring enough to try to make those jobs better and to make the institutions better? So I think it's really an issue of sanctification and renewal. And I think both boomers and the church have some resources for that conversation. And finally, the area in which we can talk together is the issue of community. What does it mean for all of us, young and old, boomers and parents and grandparents of boomers and children of boomers, people who are ethnically diverse, people who are grappling with the issues of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman? How can all of us live in some form of community without shooting each other, literally, or without running away and escaping, so that all we do is we sit at home as a single person watching our TV day after day, never commuting to work because we can now stay and run our computer at home? Is it possible to have community in the last half of the 20th century and through the 20th century? I think the church has some resources for that. I think the boomers have some questions. And certainly that's the community that can redeem us all. Well, I've got 5 minutes left. I did it. Let's talk about what I said. Are there questions? Are there things that you disagree with? Is this totally off? Yes?
Just a clarification. I've got kids who are in high school. I'm just getting ready to graduate.
Yes.
Will they be facing exactly the same thing?
No. No, because they're going to be workers will be scarce.
Okay, so this is really a baby boomer issue.
Right.
Although they're going to be paying for all this, keep in
mind.
They may not want to do that. They may.
We've got demand for jobs. They're not going to be able to get as high as fast.
But there's still, in the economy, there's always need for entry-level jobs. And they are going to enter, certainly they're going to enter the job market at a point much higher because they will be scarce. But I think that that's the challenge to the church,
right,
is to be that community, because there are going to be bunches of us around without children to care for us in old age. There are going to be a bunch of us who have never experienced family.
And there are too many churches that think anything that isn't the liturgy and the business of running the operation of the church is wrong. That having fun is something that is aberration.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay for the youth group.
Is that true?
But there are many that are.
In my experience.
Well, in the way I think that we view social activities, I think one of the big the church has not responded with new social activities that are geared towards baby boomers, whereas historically they would have the sewing bees or the, you know, the get-togethers. Those don't translate to baby boomers, in part because 70% of women aren't even home to go to the sewing bee at 9:30 in the morning. But they have encountered that with another activity.
How do you build community for baby boomers in the church?
One simple suggestion, and it's interesting because our church has been fighting this, is that we have a 1,000-member church with in supposedly an affluent area full of baby boomers. But one of the things that one of our new pastors came, a woman, she said, you know, every time you guys have a meeting or a meal, you set up an even number of chairs around these tables. And you're telling single people or people with, you know, you're not welcome here. If it's an adult meeting, we only accept couples. Because when people sit down, there's places for two left at the table, and a single person will not sit there because they know that's a place for a couple. Mm-hmm. Small things that, you know, it's a matter of being open in small ways.
Yeah, and it may be the liturgy. It may be that, you know, I think that's powerful enough, and it may be the only time that boomers will give the church is to do it on Sunday morning. And that puts a lot of pressure on that time, but what's life without some pressure? Yes?
It's kind of interesting. I've come across a few authors that aren't exactly tied to the church that are talking about community. M. Scott Peck, that is kind mm-hmm. of a popular guy right now,
right.
His latest book, A Different Drum, is all about community building. And his challenge is to an individual mm-hmm. Commitment to building community, you know, to do what you can to create your own community where you are, whether it means going around to your neighbor and getting a Bible study going, or, you know, mm-hmm. Another author that's in the education field, Stephen Glenn, talks about people when their children become teenagers and are starting to run around a lot more with their peers and so on, to establish community among the parents of the people that your kids are running with, so that you have contacts. If there's something going on at school, you know, you can talk to the parents and find out what their impression is. If somebody's, you know, your kids say, well, they're doing, you know, their child's doing this, you can go.
I think that applies to the workplace too, where much of us spend time. I think not only should clergy be visiting parishioners at the place of work to find out, to build community there, but I think we should be visiting each other's place of work, those of us who share that ministry. That's a good suggestion.
Your comment about, don't waste my time, mm-hmm. I think is, especially within the merger now, the ELC, I can think back to my dad, very active in the church, although at that time the pastor of the congregation was the ultimate authority. Mm-hmm. If the council really didn't like what he was doing, well, that really didn't matter. The pastor was in charge. And that has changed to where at the local level, my congregation, the council, we are very much in charge of the day-to-day operation. Mm-hmm. And I see the ELCAs having a real tough time getting the laity involved actively, not having, they have committees, people are mm-hmm. on the committees, but we'll meet twice a year and you'll kind of go through this agenda and we'll take it in mm-hmm. under advice, which may be part of our slow start.
It's a very difficult challenge. I mean, the church has been given contrary messages by baby boomers. We want to participate. We want to be all involved. We want to be taken seriously. And we don't want to give you a lot of time.
And leave us alone.
But I think but that's a good, that is a challenge that can be met and can be addressed. Well, this was fun.